Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni. I am joined by the full crew today. We've got Tracy. Hi, Tracy.
Hello.
We all know Tracy's voice. Cody, how are you doing?
Just fine, Pat. Doing well.
That's good. And Bo Johnson.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be here.
We got Matt in studio. Karen's on vacation, so I'm flying without a net. I usually have an assistant here helping me out. Cody, what is our topic today?
It is something my wife loves when I say it. Sorry, not sorry.
Oh, yeah. So fun. Okay. I can't wait to hear what this topic is about, Pat. But before we get started, wanted to make sure our listeners knew we're doing something really fun on May 17. And here's what we're doing. If you listen to At the Table podcast, you've heard us talk about careers, and you know that Pat loves being a career consultant and talking to people about jobs, and that's come up a lot. And we just thought, let's do a deep dive into jobs, careers, and hiring. And what so many of our audience have never gotten to experience is Pat doing that at a whiteboard. So May 17, we're doing an event called At the Whiteboard with Patrick Lencioni, where we're going to do a deep dive into that topic. And I'll just let Tracy or Cody chime in a little bit about why we are excited about sharing you with the world, and in particular, you at a whiteboard.
So I would say that I think Pat really comes alive when he's got a whiteboard pen and a whiteboard next to him. I mean, that's when he's at his best. Mm-hmm. So we're going to try to mimic that. And Bo and Cody, you're going to be involved in that as well. So we're super excited.
And anybody who's in the process of hiring, I just interrupted Cody, but I'm just going to keep going. Anybody who's in the process of hiring somebody or thinking about a career change, registration is totally free and you'll get to ask Pat questions that he'll be able to respond to live.
Pat lacks so much energy on this podcast. You should come see him at the event, but you know, it'll be good. You should go.
Very good. And we're going to work in working genius into that, which is a big part of this too, but careers in general, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Hey, I got to say something. I got to make a confession here. I've been binge watching for the first time ever. I had a few days off and I binge watched a show called Shetland, which is in Scotland. And so I just am doing my best not to break into a Scottish brogue, which I realize that probably wasn't one. But anyway, so every time I start to talk, I'm going to slip into that. So if anybody hears that, I'm not being pretentious. I just can't help it.
So, Pat, we're going to do the whole May 17 event in Scottish. Is that what I'm hearing?
Shut your pie hole.
All right. We'll put the link for the event in the show notes. You can also find it on our website. And with that, let's get back. Sorry, not sorry. Pat, what are we talking about today?
You know, what we're really talking about is regret and the uselessness of regret. Everybody, every business, every leader, all of us have had done things and made a mistake, and it's so tempting to dwell on that mistake. And yet regret is largely a useless emotion. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is how leaders, how organizations, how all of us, no matter what we're doing, can recognize the futility of regret and look forward and turn it into something good. And we're also, at one point, we'll talk about how in this Easter week, that's when we're recording this, how it's particularly relevant today. So that's what we're talking about.
So you are with teams, pal, you're coaching leaders. How do you see regret sort of paralyzing or plaguing organizations?
What I see is when organizations make a mistake, suddenly they look in the rearview mirror and all they do is look at what happened and they wish it hadn't happened. And they're trying to punish people for what happened. And they're trying to, and it all becomes very fear-based. And they're like, we never want that to happen again. So let's all spin around in our chair and look at the past and talk about why we're so upset. And the opposite of that is, okay, what can we learn from this that we will look back later and say, that turned out to be a blessing?
You know, Pat, when we talk to teams about, you know, the five dysfunctions of a team, the very top of that pyramid is this idea of collective results. You know, we talk about the best, most cohesive, effective teams in the world take their individual hats off and they focus on the collective results of the team or the individual. So we talk about that in the sense of like, hey, when teams are successful, they need to share that success and talk about the collective success. And then what happens is, I think what you just described, oftentimes when they make a mistake, it goes the exact opposite. They want to find whose decision was that or whose department made the thing. And I think some of what you're describing too is the best teams in the world share in as much with the success as they do the failure and sort of rally around that failure.
Exactly. And that's not to say that you shouldn't look back to learn from things, or it's not to say that you shouldn't say, hey, we're sorry that that happened. You apologize and own it. What it is to say, though, is we need to not dwell on that and ask ourselves what could be better as a result of what just happened. Mm-hmm. You know, and I love using the examples from the world of sports. They talk about like golfers when they miss a putt. You know, I mean, when I golf, I just keep every hole. I go, man, if I hadn't missed that putt, my score would be this. I'm thinking about that putt and this next putt. I better not miss this one too. And so I do. But the best golfers, the best athletes, the best leaders go, okay, we learn from that. Let's let that go and focus on what we're going to do better going forward so they can look back and say, wow, that might turn out to be the thing that made us better.
I don't like thinking about the mistakes in the past, but sort of paradoxically, guilt can actually keep you living in the past. It can,
right.
You're trying to get rid of that bad feeling that you made a mistake or did something wrong, but that regret, that guilt actually kind of keeps one foot back there in the past and doesn't allow you to be able to move forward.
Yeah, guilt is good when it, in the moment that it kicks in, it goes, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Mm. Once you repent, if you will, which means to change, and you say, oh, I should not have done that. Guilt after that is what turns into regret, and that is destructive, I think.
Hmm. Well, I like what you said at the beginning, Pat. You said, I've not heard you say it this way before, but regret is a useless emotion. It's like, so there is a productive way of handling a mistake, but regret is sort of unfruitful in all of its forms. There's no way of, unless you're changing that regret into a new pattern or new action, new behavior, but staying in regret is the thing that will keep you, like you said, Bo, in the past. And it's completely useless emotion from a personal standpoint and business.
Hmm. I think that it might be interesting to sort of distinguish between a couple different feelings here. One might be remorse. Remorse might be if you hurt a person, if something that you did caused pain to somebody. And another might be just a mistake. I can think about lots of mistakes that we've made where you have an error in your calculation or you don't do spell check or something that's just a mistake. We're not necessarily, well, maybe we are talking about either of those things, the typo or the time that you hurt somebody. We're more talking about the decisions that we made that we thought this was a good decision and we ended up being wrong and wanted to move on from it quickly. Curious to hear you respond to that, Pat.
You know, I think we're talking about all of them because now, if you do something and you have remorse for it, that's very appropriate. And then you should atone for that and apologize. Mm-hmm. But when you've done everything you can, then you have to move forward. And so I think that what we're talking about is dwelling on the negative and not realizing that something positive can come from that, but only if we look for the positive. You know, we did a long podcast about Southwest Airlines, you know, so they had a terrible thing happened over Christmas. They had the worst 2 weeks of their company's life. The question now is, what are they going to do? Now, they have to apologize. They have to own it. They have to make it right with all their customers. But they can sit around their offices thinking about, man, if only that snowstorm hadn't happened. If only we had fixed this. If only we had made a better decision back then. Or they can go forward and say, how will that make us an even better company 2 years from now? And that the difference between those two approaches is, I think, the difference between success and failure. I really do.
Hmm. You know, Pat, I'll even chime in and say, we've had a number of these experiences in our own company history, and not the least of which was right when we came up with Working Genius. And we went to one of the large publishing agencies and who already had a large assessment that they had done. And we thought, boy, this would be the best thing if we could get this new model and this new assessment plugged into sort of their systems and their, you know, sort of behemoth operating, you know, system there at this publisher. And we tried two or three times to no avail to make it work the way that it would work for them and it would work for us. And there was a moment where we could have sat there and said, man, and we just kind of bang our heads on the wall trying to figure out how do we make that work, instead of pivoting and moving. And looking back now, Pat, that we've worked with a new publisher, that we own this assessment ourselves, it is a far better and more successful future reality than the one that we had thought was going to be the successful one at the time. And if we had sort of stayed there and sort of wallowed in that, we would not be where we are today.
Right. And so many blessings are come in hidden packages. And you look back and you mm-hmm. go, wow, at the time that seemed so terrible. But because we trusted and moved forward, something good happened.
Going back to the team analogy, and I would keep trying to tie it to some of the other principles that we have in our, you know, arsenal of organizational health, which I do think that that team analogy around the pyramid and sharing success and sharing failure. But the other thing that sort of applies here, Pat, is when you're a team leader or an organization that has experienced failure, a lot of times what that does is it creates a sense of urgency or even crisis in the organization right then. And this is where you have an opportunity to sort of rally people around a thematic goal. So after you've thought that you're going to achieve a certain goal, you've experienced failure, there is this moment where it feels like a crisis. And this is exactly when we often go into companies and sort of manufacture a crisis to say, hey, in the next 6 to 9 months, what is the one thing that we need to accomplish? And failure actually kind of bakes that into the natural progression of an organization.
Yeah. And it either gives you a positive, like, let's rally and try to address this, or it gives you, oh my gosh, I'm afraid. Let's attack ourselves, attack one another, and drive ourselves further into fear. And when you say we create a crisis, what we mean is we create a sense of urgency around something right. as though it were a crisis, even when it's an opportunity.
Well, sometimes, yeah. Pat, we mess up. We can create a crisis in an organization. No, I'm
just- I think one of the things that keeps me at bay from wanting to do that is when I feel like the people around me are scorekeeping. That they're, mm-hmm. oh, remember when you did this, or you better not screw up again. And I've experienced at the table group that we will celebrate our mistakes. Now, we won't celebrate being sloppy. We don't celebrate like, oh, the details don't matter. But we've made some decisions that ended up being pretty drastic failures. I think Cody is really good at laughing about and celebrating his mistakes. And I think it'd be fun for you to tell one of those stories, Cody. I think it creates the vibe and feeling of our team of it's okay for us to mess up. We're willing to learn quickly from them and not hold each other to this standard of being perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we've now onboarded people into our culture more than we ever have in the last 3 or 4 years. And oftentimes what we end up doing is people are so afraid to make a mistake that we sort of wait and anticipate the first mistake so that we can celebrate it and go, okay, you know, in this culture, that's how we go about learning and failing and moving forward. And I'm not trying to pin it on somebody else other than myself, but Bo, I love celebrating my own mistakes, but I've only made like one or two of them, right? So,
right. Yeah. Practice makes perfect though. You know, you just keep getting better. You know, I'm looking out the window here at one of our new employees who we know doesn't like to make mistakes. He's super, mm-hmm. and we're all sitting around like, we can't wait for him to do that. Not because we want to bust him, but because we want to say, it's okay. Because we know it's going to be like really hard for him.
Yeah. And in fact, Pat, during his first week, you said to him, we can't wait until you make your first mistake. He is so hyper responsible that Pat just had to go right there and call it out. Like, we're going to celebrate with you. He had a look of horror on his face.
Yeah.
This must be why Pat likes working with me so much, because he gets to celebrate all the mistakes.
I think the other thing that happens when you do that is it keeps people in line with that value of being hungry and hustling. Because if you have to do everything perfectly, you end up slowing down and you end up being more cautious. And Tracy used the word fearful earlier, being afraid of making a mistake. We want to keep everybody here running hard after the ball. And to do that, we have to be willing to have a few mistakes.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. My dad, God rest his soul, coached me in baseball and other sports. And he used to say in baseball, hey, if you're running after the ball and you make a mistake, I don't care. That's fine. But if you're not hustling and then you come off the field and you're like, oh, I don't care. And he's like, no, I want you to care more than that. But people that make mistakes because they're trying, and most companies make mistakes in good faith. And what they have to do is say, okay, how can this become better now as a result of that?
I think it'd be fun for people to hear Cody tell a story of the mistake that I'm thinking of, if you can read my mind.
Is it the one that came up this morning at the leadership team meeting? So here I'll tell it. I have no problem.
I can't wait to hear. I don't know what this is going to be.
So we were
it's about right hiring me. Book, Just kidding.
Yeah. No, we were trying to get as many people rallied, as many people in our ecosystem rallied around the launch of the Working Genius book. And we had done everything from email campaigns and social media blitzes. And then we had a meeting, which is one of my favorite meetings, probably 3 weeks out from the event. And I thought, like, okay, we know the playbook we're running, but let's just say we have one Hail Mary play in there that we think, like, hey, if it comes to this, what would be the Hail Mary play? And so we were throwing out all these ideas. And I think the reason Bo loves this one a lot is because I came in really hot galvanizing this idea of, like, and so I said, we had been running a very successful launch this book event. And I thought 3 weeks beforehand, in the middle of our meeting, I said, hey guys, I think I have it.
Oh, no. It was like this. It was, I've got it. It was drop the pen, drop the mic. I figured it out. We had set a 2-minute timer to brainstorm ideas. It was so fantastic. I mean, I got it. And then he looked at me. You probably know what I'm thinking, right? Like, mm-hmm. No, I have no idea.
And
what was the idea?
To Bo's credit, he had no idea what I was thinking. I said, hey, you know, we talk about this concept of zigging while everyone else is zagging. Everybody does digital marketing for events. What if we pulled a list of a bunch of our customers' physical addresses and we send them a postcard invitation to the event where they just have to scan the QR code and do this? And we quickly pulled up, you know, 10,000 or so addresses. And the whole team sort of rallied around this idea, even though it was not going, well, you know where this is going. I think we spent I'm telling you this live in front of our CFO and Pat. I think I spent multiple thousands of dollars inviting people in these postcards. And of those 10,000 addresses, I think a dozen people scanned the QR code and came to our event. So
I didn't even know that.
I think 5,000 of them were returned to us as well.
So now we have those.
Well, you know, Cody, I thought of another mistake you made, but you celebrate this all the time. It was somebody said, we should send people some sort of gift around the Working Genius.
Yep.
And somebody said, socks. People love socks. And Cody was like, socks are the stupidest thing ever. That's the dumbest thing. And then we sent socks out and people are constantly saying, we love the socks. And Cody's like, well, I have no good ideas around that kind of stuff.
Imagine how high you guys could fly if I weren't here, Pat. Imagine.
Here's what I genuinely love about it is now, of course, postcards is become an inside joke on our team. And what it does is, Cody mentioned this, we've onboarded a lot of new people, and continuing to tell the postcard story helps everybody know, you know, the COO doesn't take himself that seriously. And we're gonna fire a few bullets that don't turn into cannonballs. We're gonna take some risks that don't necessarily absolutely pay off. And it just lowers the anxiety or fear of making a mistake, because we all know we're for each other. There was no, I told you so. There was no, well, your budget's now decreased because you did this. No, we learned something and we tried something and we celebrate that.
Right. You know, I think about this. We've written 13 books, I think. Mm-hmm. Two of those 13, that's like over 10%. You know, that's like close to, what is that? 2 out of 13, 2 out of 12, and you want, that's like 16%.
Yeah.
We have had to retitle the books. And mm-hmm. probably my favorite book title was horrible. And that was The 3 Signs of a Miserable Job. And it took us to publish it, to send it out there and have people call us and say, I can't take that book to work because I get too many dirty looks from my boss. And we had to retitle the whole thing. So, you know, and it's like, yep, that was stupid. And every time we go to title a new book now, we think, okay, let's not do that again. Let's remember. And that helped us think more clearly about the ones going forward.
And I think it does speak to the culture that we've created, Pat. I love that you use this word around sort of regret, is that it's useless, is we don't spend any time in the emotion of regret. We mm-hmm. very quickly, like, we'll celebrate that story, own our own culpability. But quite frankly, we share a lot. Like, I don't feel like I'm on an island when mm-mm. our team says the postcards failed, because we all discern that together. We rallied around yep. it. And so we have this collective ownership in the failure of that. Now, I was spearheaded the failure, no doubt, but we collectively owned it. And then we get to not spend any time in regret or remorse and kind of move mm-hmm. forward right away.
You know what's interesting? I think, though, it's easier for me to do this as a group. But when I make decisions on my own and I make mistakes, I think it's easy for me to self-attack and regret. So it's interesting that when we work as teams, we can help each other, we can lift each other's arms up and go, hey, don't go back there. But I can tell you over the last few years, there have been a number of things that I've done that I look back and realize they were the right things, but man, I regretted them for a long time. And so I think that's one of the reasons why teamwork is better than individual work, because we can help each other to avoid these negative emotions.
I love that.
Really good.
Hey, you know, since it's Easter week, we're going to say this. And for whether you're a follower of Jesus and you're listening to this or not, you know what goes on in Easter week and Holy Week. And so one of the ways to look at this is like Good Friday. We call it Good Friday. Isn't that interesting? That's the day Jesus was crucified. And they call it Good Friday because without that, there would have never been Easter. And oftentimes we have to go through something hard before something amazing happens. And now I'm going to drop some heavy theology on people. And that is this. I heard somebody say once, if you go to heaven, you will look back at your life and you'll look at the worst things that happened to you with joy. And you'll say, that terrible thing that happened was part of my journey here. And so you shouldn't regret that because it led to something good. Consequently, if you don't go to heaven, you go to hell. God help none of us do that. We will look back at even the best things that happened in our lives with sadness and true regret. And so when something bad happens, what we have to do is go, how can this lead to something better? How can I make this difficult thing that I'm in the midst of right now a great story about how it's going to make our organization or our life better in the long run? So everything that happens is an opportunity for improvement. And that's probably how we can avoid the negativity of regret. So a little theological Easter message for our listeners.
I love it. I even think about so many of the disciples tried to prevent Good Friday from happening. And and that's the way we think of our organizations, like, oh no, let's not let any tragedy happen. But on the other side of that, there can be quite a bit of upside. And I think that was what we were talking about today.
Absolutely. Hey, do we have a commercial, an unpaid ad?
We do.
Lay it on us, guys. Lay it on us, guys.
We tossed it. It was a toss up. You guys wouldn't get one of them because it was snow blowers. We're in the middle of the the worst winter in Utah in like 3 decades. So we decided to compromise and say sunshine.
Oh, I'm on board with this one.
And even as Californians, you guys haven't had much, right?
No, we have not. Today is a beautiful sunny day, but we have not had a lot of sunshine. It's been an awful winter. But I love me some sunshine.
So we're going way out on a limb there. We're going to do a commercial for sunshine, huh?
Yeah, go purchase some at your local retailer or go on a... My family just got back from Phoenix, and it did wonders for us to be out in the sunshine and then come back to literally feet and feet of snow. So,
hey, Matt, you were in Europe last week. How was it sunny there?
Very. We got pretty lucky. We were in Italy.
All over Italy, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Okay. We are pro sunshine at the table group. Yes. Putting it out there. We're not ashamed to say pro sunshine. We're also pro our audience. We appreciate you guys a lot. And we look forward to talking to you next time on At the Table. God bless.